Morning to Luke chapter 9. We'll get there in a few minutes, but you'll be ready when we do. I'm supposed to take a picture for Jen of the places where we are, so you'll have to indulge me a moment. If there weren't so many of you, it'd be easier, but there. Okay, that's better. Excellent. I will eventually. This thing and I, we'll come to some terms. Marshall's right, you know, bad pennies just keep turning up. Okay. Yeah, how do we fit our disciples into the big picture of the spiritual revolution? I've enjoyed very much being able to be with you guys this weekend, and being able to touch base with all of you and rub elbows and be encouraged by you, and it's a great blessing to me. Really appreciate Marshall's work in organizing, and I really thought that your topics were, you know, well defined, certainly, but also just really well thought out and well assigned. So yeah, great job, Marshall. Way to go. It's really, I think, it's been a super weekend. So grateful to be a part of that. Like Marshall said, I do like to do some traveling occasionally, and I've had opportunity to be here and be in Lancaster, and then I occasionally stir up trouble around the rest of the East, and sometimes even where I live. Well, this June has been particularly, I think I will be home for 9 days in the month of June by the time it's all over. But several things just happened to meet at the same time, but it's worth doing. It's worth doing. And when we're talking this morning, I want to try and give you a little bit of an indication as to what my own personal perspective is on the spiritual revolution, on really the new creation movement. That's how I'll describe it. And so I hope that helps to fit things in a larger context for you. And then we want to talk about how do our disciples fit into that as a part of that larger scale. By the time, it won't be the first time, but by the time I head back and turn the wheel westward a week from today, I think I'll have stopped at about 10 different congregations or so throughout the East Coast. I apologize, but everything from here over is the East Coast for me. So once you cross South Dakota, it's all East after that. Everything. Yeah, but... And the things that I notice about where we are is there are lots of small congregations, and they're scattered all over the place. But there's lots of small congregations who are, you know, Lima in that sense is among the larger among us. But lots of small congregations, people who for one reason or another find themselves in fellowship with with others of like mind in one place or this or that, but small congregations who are really committed and devoted to the principles of the Scripture that make it work. You know, it's our call, if you will, is to try and put the potential into the gospel message. So, you know, two generations ago, there was a major push, and you guys are familiar with this, to really stand firm for baptism. Okay, and I can appreciate that. I think Luke did a great job yesterday of bringing out some of the key scriptures in being able to have that discussion and have it intelligently and successfully. But that alone has proven to be insufficient as a movement. I mean, The issue of baptism alone, for the sake of salvation, has proven to be really insufficient to move the gospel long term. The resulting mindset caused the personal infrastructure inside that movement to self-destruct. Baptism is not the banner under which we march. I'm not taking anything away from that. But you guys get the idea. Okay. We've talked a lot about discipleship this weekend, and when Jesus said it's enough to become like his teacher, really, that's what we're striving for. Is to grow up in all aspects into him who's ahead, even Christ. To be built up, spiritually mature, to be able to move that to our disciples. And those disciples be motivated not out of a sense of duty or compulsion, or fear, but motivated out of a genuine love for Christ. And the previous movements have mixed those two things up. They've called one the other, and it's been revealed to be short-sighted. So, when we're talking about, the reason I bring this out is I want you to understand what that movement looks like. It's a movement that restores the new creation to the potential of the Christian to put on the character of Christ and therefore be conformed also in his actions. See? But that push for the new creation, and to understand what it is to worship God in spirit and in truth. Those are if there are key elements to what we might term the spiritual revolution, key elements of that movement, those are them. The new creation principle, that no longer sinners saved by grace, but rather saints empowered by the Spirit of God that dwells within them. And the understanding of what it is to worship God in spirit and in truth. Now, lots of folks have found themselves through our associations as those connections and networks continue to grow and expand. Lots of folks have found themselves at odds with, their local congregations. I had a discussion with a couple of elders in one of the Churches of Christ in Spokane. When I was first getting the church off the ground there 10 years ago, and one of the questions that they wanted to ask me is what do we need another church for in Spokane? I mean, we already have a Church of Christ. We already believe baptism. What do we need another, and why would you want to drive the 200 miles between cities to do it? And so in the course of our conversation, they were not exactly a little more than a little disingenuous, but in the course of our conversation, it became clear to me, and sometimes I can't resist. And I said, listen, we're on the same page, right? I mean, look, we believe in Jesus. We believe in the death, the burial, the resurrection. Mm-hmm. We believe in baptism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. That's good. We know that the Lord wants us to try to live, in a way that gives glory to Christ. Mm-hmm. Now, we understand as long as we're in this body, I mean, obviously there are some inherent pitfalls and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try and live. Our job is to try and strive for the character of Christ, even though, there's always going to be something. There's going to be something that catches us as long as we're bound by the sinful flesh. Mm-hmm. And see, some of you are on to me already, right? And so our job is to try to strive and to try and work to put on the character of Christ and to spread the gospel, even though we understand that we're always going to be slaves to sin in this body. But, mm-hmm. I said, that's why we need a church in Spokane, because you can't put new wine into old skins. I've watched that. I mean, sooner or later, the concept of the new creation, what it means to worship in spirit and truth, makes it impossible for those who hold to that understanding to maintain a real kind of fellowship with those who don't. What fellowship do light and darkness have? It was really interesting because I knew that the one guy was having some Bible studies with a buddy of mine, and he was talking about the new creation, and the other guy wasn't. He'd been to Bible college. And so, and I said, and everything I just told you, though, is false, and he knows it. And the one elder looks at it, you knew that? Wait a minute. He said, that's why we have to have a church in Spokane. Because those principles are worth standing on. If we don't, those principles are, that's not some kind of extraneous or supplemental addition to the gospel. Those are fundamental elements of the gospel. If we believe in the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, then we are naturally forced to the conclusion that the new creation is really walking in newness of life. You can't separate those two. So, I'll give you that just to a little bit of a definition of terms. Those are the things that we're fighting for in the spiritual revolution. Those are the things that make the difference. Those are the reasons why. See? And that's the banner under which we march, is the gospel of Christ. See? As it's fully understood in the new creation. That's what the gospel is for, is to produce that, is to produce new creatures, is to produce people who really can put on and be conformed to the character of Christ. That's not a sideline issue. That is the issue. It's the purpose of immersion. It's not an add-on afterwards. So when people grasp that concept, then they are forced to the position that we are going to have to, at some point, pursue that. And in many cases, it makes fellowship with those who don't hold that conviction impossible. It just does. You can't, there's no other way to slice it. So, things that I see, I've been particularly encouraged over the last, 10 or 12 years or so. The church is very much in transition. The church is very much moving. It wasn't very long ago that particularly churches of Christ viewed each individual congregation as needing to be the last bastion of truth, right? And we viewed, frankly, we viewed everybody else with suspicion. I mean, we knew we had it right, but we weren't too sure about those other guys. That's very much different now. See, within the network, to use that term, of the new creation, that's very much different. And whereas individual congregations do have the responsibility to make the call as they understand the scriptures, our fellowship has grown, not only in number, but certainly in geography, and tremendously in their approach to how we interact. Our concept of the new creation as a movement, as a group, is not defined by individual congregations anymore. That, in my view, that is a huge step forward. You know, when I get to see you guys here, of course I get to see everybody from everywhere, right? Because they all come in. See, previously, it wasn't that way. I mean, maybe a couple of congregations would get together, but, right? I mean, we'd sit over there and they'd sit over there, and it isn't that way, is it? People have set aside some of those, and I don't want to, maybe allegiance is the wrong term, but they've set aside some of the local mindset in exchange for a larger mindset. Guys, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. And whereas the parents are coming along more slowly, The kids are moving much faster. Much faster. It's really exciting to me to be here and to see the... they wore them all yesterday. All their Dare to be a Daniel t-shirts from this year's Montana Youth Camp. But they don't see the movement as being individual congregation centered. They don't see the church as being a certain locale or even a region. They see the church as one movement. There are no seams or lines for those guys, due in large part to the things like the Montana Youth Camp, where all those guys get together and they have a great time and they're one group. They don't see the divisions that way. I mean, occasionally the Delta guys are good. But they don't see the divisions. To them, they're all one group together. And then technology has added tremendously to that. Because they don't just go back to the places where they live. They're always in contact with each other. They're always talking. They're always sharing. This happened or that happened. And they all know it. They all know what's going on in each other's lives. That's a really big deal. That's a really big deal. I'm excited about that. I'm excited that, you know, guys like Marshall have made the commitment over the last, well, even before, you know, your dad. I really appreciate him and Bill and the guys, you know, who would load up the van and do the unthinkable and drive across the country, right, so that the kids could hang out for a week and then drive back. Guys, that makes a big difference. And I think, if I may speak for him, I think that's made a big difference in Marshall. To be able to be a part of that, have seen that. Okay. Now that sounds a little bit strange. It sounds a little bit odd to the outsider who, you would do what? But if our focus is bigger, it just seems perfectly reasonable. One of the biggest challenges that we fight is a guy named Norm. That's right, you got it. Right? See, the norm is one of the biggest obstacles that we have to get over. Because we don't do things normally. But once we've done it, right, then it becomes the norm, doesn't it? See, Norm can work for you if you make him, but he can work against you if you let him. So what we have to do is we have to be in the habit of thinking bigger than Norm and changing Norm so that he works for us. Now they don't think anything. We'll load up two vans and drive them across the country. Why? Because that's just what we do. See, but the kids see that as the norm. See what's happened? There's been a seismic shift, in my view, the way in which the church sees itself. And incorporating those guys. When Steve Doty's picking who knows how many people, right? If you're not careful, you may find yourself on a plane with Steve. Traveling to parts unknown. You signed the waiver. You know what that does, though? Look how that brings those congregations together. Look how it brings those people. I know that they're helping others, but that's the way that real fellowship takes place, is through the context of helping someone else. Does that bring those folks together? Absolutely it does. See that, yeah. See, they're involved in something bigger than... And the result is, those are the things, in my view, that lay the foundation for the necessary teamwork to do something that we have not done before. In my view, the church is poised through the foundation of the Christian schools, see, that allow us to have a great deal of that, what's the word I'm looking for? Allow us to have a great deal, especially on the youth level, of the commonality between us. Give us the base from which to draw, then built on things like the youth camp, things like these family camps where we all can get together, We can rub elbows with people from different congregations, and everybody knows now we're all on the same team. That is a big deal. That's a big deal. And that's accelerating. And in my view, that gives me great hope and excitement for what's happening. There's a great need in those congregations for developing leadership. Lots of those congregations need leadership. And, you know, I'm thankful that the guys in Wasion are willing to get rid of Marshall, you know, in the afternoon. Because that really is the nuts and bolts process of developing leadership. And I'm thankful for the guys in Lima who are willing to let him drive. And, see, to develop those sorts of things. We're going to need, one of the best things that General Douglas MacArthur did at the end of the First World War is he totally revamped West Point Academy. He was the commandant at West Point for a number of years, but MacArthur knew at the end of the First World War that the second was coming and predicted it almost to the year. He recognized that this is not a long-term peace and that the new war will be a very different one than the last. In World War I, artillery was pulled by horse. In World War II, airplanes became the game changer. MacArthur understood that technology was changing and he would need the kind of people, the kind of officer corps, to prosecute a very different kind of war. And he prepared the United States through training the leaders at West Point through that generation. And a number of those guys served with him and under his command in different capacities in the Second World War. He was the force behind winning World War II. He's a tremendous, tremendous man. In my view, a singular person, see, designated to do a particular role in history at a particular time in a particular way. That's where I think we find ourselves now, is retooling for a push. And I see really positive things in our own West Point of sorts in preparing that leadership to take the next step, to prosecute a different kind of war in a different kind of age, but for the same principles. So when I look at that, I see those are things that we definitely need. We need people who are willing to have the skills, to learn the skills, to make them usable. So that's two things, really. I think you're going to learn a lot if you're going to be a teacher in the Christian school, or a helper in the Christian school, or a supervisor, or a monitor, or whatever. That's definitely one avenue that we have built into the system where you can learn a lot of the personal lessons about leadership, about how to work with people. Working with kids is just like working with people, because we won't ever tell them this, but we really can't make people do anything. And here's a secret for you. You can't make kids work either. Now, if you're in the school, you knew that already, but really can't be done. You know why kids work for you? I mean, when I first started teaching, I thought that kids worked out of a sense of duty. I know. So naive. I thought maybe I could motivate them. See, by the threat, you know, by consequences. What a maroon. I thought maybe I could motivate them by rewards. You can't. You know, ACE uses the illustration of the cart and the horse and the carrot and the stick and the load. That's bunk. It is. I mean, there is a cart, a horse, there is a carrot and a stick. But you know why kids work for you? It's because they love you. That's why kids work for you. You know why they love you? Because you love them. That's why they work for you. You know why people work for you? Because of the stick. Oh no, it's a carrot. Wait. It's the same thing. See, people will work with you because they love you, and they love you because you love them. That's a freebie that's not included in my notes this morning. You get that. There's no charge for that. We have a real need for developing leadership inside congregations, people who are willing to go and do that, learn how to do those tasks, and then who are willing to take that training and apply it. And it's usually not going to be in that particular locale. When we're asking this question, we're really asking, how do our disciples fit into the big picture of the spiritual revolution? That's what Jesus did. He trained 12 guys, his disciples, to fit into the big picture of the spiritual revolution. So we're not doing anything. This isn't a particularly, this isn't something new. How does Jesus train his guys to fit into the spiritual revolution? Well, first off, he trains them through one of the, I noticed some time ago that the Lord has certain training exercises that he runs all people through. Everybody who's going to be his disciple is going to go through roughly the same exercises to get the same results. Because the Lord needs the same aptitudes in anybody who's going to follow him. So he tends to use the same lessons to do that. One of the lessons, one of the very first things that God requires of anybody who's going to follow him, them had to first be obedient to the command, follow me. Abraham does, right? David does. I mean, you start putting your mind to it, you'll find that not in every circumstance, but in almost all, the first thing that somebody had to do in order to be a disciple, in order to follow the Lord, was to leave wherever they were and go wherever he called them. Israel as a nation, their first job is to leave Egypt. You can make all the applications. Of course, it's easy with the disciples. When Jesus calls the disciples, their first job is what? Leave this, follow me. You're going to have to be willing to do that. The Great Commission begins with that command, doesn't it? Go. Go where? Well, follow me is really what Jesus is asking you to do by example. See, go. That implies you're going to have to leave something behind. That's the beginning of the Great Commission. Nobody's able to make disciples until they're first able to go. In preparing for... let's get to Luke chapter 9 here. And then we'll build on that. Luke chapter 9. We just grabbed a couple of these that are handy. Luke 9, verse 23. Jesus was saying to them all, "If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." That's the inherent sacrifice in the going, isn't it? So, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake, he's the one who will save it. What's a man profited if he gains the whole world, loses or forfeits himself? Whoever is ashamed of me and my words, of him will the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in his glory and the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. Let him, if he wants to come after me, okay, let him deny himself and let's do that. Let's go. Let's get moving. One of the things we have to understand is no student is above his teacher, right? I mean, that's the way it is. No student's above his teacher. If you want your disciples to be willing to carry out the go of the Great Commission, you're going to have demonstrated that personally. When Jesus calls the 12 and he says to them, "Come follow me," which from their perspective is go, right? Jesus has already demonstrated to them his willingness to do the going. Jesus isn't asking them to rise to a level he has not already ascended. Jesus is saying, you're going to come along with me. When we're making disciples, we ought not to expect our disciples to rise to a level greater than the one we're willing to personally demonstrate. Now, that applies on several different levels. That applies at the congregational level. If you're going to be in a position of leadership, whatever capacity that is, on a congregational level, you cannot expect your disciples in the congregation to rise to a level that you're not willing to take on. You're not willing to make sacrifices. Don't expect anybody else in the congregation to do that also. That just doesn't make any sense. Okay. Let me be a little bit more personal. Let me get after parents for just a minute. Parents, don't expect your children to make sacrifices for the gospel that you are unwilling to make. It's strange to me that somebody will move across the country for a different job, but they can't move across town to be a part of a local congregation. Why is that? Well, I had to. It was for work. Really? Dude, what about the go? What about the go? We found this. It's a great, everybody, I'm in here, you guys aren't like it, but everybody in Montana wants to live in the country. You know, we want to live in the country. Like our cities are so big. Missoula is only 70,000. I think in some states that counts as rural. But not us. Everybody wants to live out. That's great! Do you know that there's a spiritual cost associated with every mile that you are away from the congregation? There is. You can't expect your kids to place value on things that you're not willing to put. They are your first disciples. You can't expect them to put the kingdom of heaven first if you've always put them first. Well, the second verse here, he says, whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake is the one who will find it. If you make your children the highest priority, how would you ever expect them to put the gospel above themselves? You just trained them for 18 years that soccer practice is more important than the assembly of the saints, and now they're supposed to become Christians and turn the switch? Right. Come on. Yep. Come on. We can't expect our disciples to make things a higher priority than we make them. When we're having Bible studies with somebody, and how do we expect them to put the Word of God first? If when you call them up and say, you know what, I don't think I'm going to make it. I had a really hard day at work, and I'm just beat. What kind of emphasis do we expect them to put on the Word of God? Come on, that's ridiculous. We can't expect, but we want them to be serious about the Scriptures. Well, get on it. I mean, if you're going to train them to be disciples, well, let's train them to be disciples. Just like you. Right? People who put their children first lose them. Let me make a slight alteration here. Hopefully the Lord doesn't mind. Whoever wishes to save his children will lose them. Whoever loses his children for my sake is the one who will save them. You have to sacrifice your family for the sake of the gospel, or you will lose them. Lots of times people have the idea that family is first and that the Scriptures and that the gospel and that the local congregation is a support mechanism so that they have a happy family. And you have got it on its head. That's not the way it is. Jesus said, man, the gospel is going to tear families up. Mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, I mean, that's hard enough as it is, right? You can laugh, it's all right. Right? All those relationships, one is going to be against the other. How come? Because not everybody's going to hold to the fact that we are new creatures in Christ and we worship in spirit and truth. Now, what priority will that have? We've got to decide that, don't we? If we make those things more important. If you want to save those things, you'll lose them. I've watched families that it was all about the kids, and they poured it into the kids, and the kids were the kids learned that lesson. The kids learned that lesson. We have to be the example that we want the kids to become. And that means they have to know that the gospel comes before them. What we're doing as a church comes before them. You know, is it... Kids are funny, you know. I don't want to go. So what? Right? I'd rather do big deal. Big deal. See, what we're doing for the gospel is more important than whether or not... that's enough of that. You get the idea. We have to train our disciples to think bigger. To be involved in a bigger movement. To be involved in the spiritual revolution. Those guys have to think bigger. And the way that they think bigger is when we think bigger. I like what Luke was saying. Sometimes it's easy to start thinking small. Because thinking small is comfortable. Thinking big is uncomfortable. When you have to, you know, when business owners, you know, at first the business is small, right? And they can pretty much run everything. They're like Steve's chief cook and bottle washer, right? They can do the whole thing. As that organization begins to grow, the owner usually is the main problem in growth. Because the owner wants to keep doing things the old way, and you can't grow and do things the way that's always been done. So he has to first move himself out of production into management. And out of management into ownership. And then if he's really good, he'll move out of that ownership to franchising or whatever. But it has to change the way that it operates. He's got to change the way that he thinks. Most business owners don't get over that hump. They can't make the shift. This is always the way we, this is how we built this business. Right? But now you're going to next, we got to think bigger. We got to think more interactive. If somebody needs something over there in such and such congregation, and you can fill that role, do it. Well, that's how I ended up in Missoula. I have not figured out how to get out yet. That's what brought me to Missoula. Guys, when you're involved in those things that are going on, doors of opportunity open for you. So, you know, I used to live in Bozeman. I traveled with Jay to Missoula. And then it happened that the gal who was the Christian school teacher in Missoula ended up, she couldn't finish the school year. She had pregnancy complications. Somebody needed to go to Missoula right now to finish the year. That was in March of, or February of 98. 2 weeks later, I was in Missoula. I've been there ever since. I occasionally, you know, foray, but see, that's it's just there's the need. Which one of your disciples do you want to send if you can't go? You have to be willing. You got to think bigger. Train our disciples to think bigger. make those kinds of commitments. Think on a larger scale. Whoever loses his life for my sake, he's the one who will save it. What is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself? Good question. Turn down to verse 57. As they were going along the road, someone said to him, "I will follow you wherever you go." That's a noble sentiment. Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes, the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." You know how it goes. He said to another, "Follow me." He said, "Permit me first to go and bury my father." He said to him, "Allow the dead to bury their own dead. As for you, go and proclaim everywhere the kingdom of God." Another also said, "I will follow you, Lord, but first permit me to say goodbye to those at home." Jesus said to him, "No one after putting his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God." There's a few applications of what it means to count the cost before you sign up, right? But we ought to, people got to know that when they're getting in. This is what we're doing. This is way bigger than just being a part of Sunday services. This is a larger movement. This is going to require some sacrifice. This is going to require involvement. This is going to require teamwork. You know, the best way to get rid of division inside the congregation is to move forward. I always tell people, don't stop the train. Don't stop the train. You've got Indian savages out there causing trouble, hooping and hollering. Don't stop the train. What are we doing as a church? We're moving. You die when you stop the train. That's when they get on board. I mean, you can pick them off. You know, I've seen it in movies, so I know it's true. You can pick them off the sides and stuff, and they fall. That's okay. Don't stop the train. We're moving forward. Jesus does not spend a lot of time to try and placate his dissenters. He moves to the next town, and the train keeps going. Guys, we got to move the train. We got to keep moving. Keep chugging. Keep going. I think you can. I think you can. In practice, what does it look like? It looks like really working together with your local leadership. What are we trying to get accomplished? What are we trying to do? Okay. Being available, making yourselves available. It means supporting those who go. I mean, it comes down to cash, doesn't it? I mean, at some point, God is, the cattle on 1,000 hills are His, but God directs them to the people who are going to finance what God wants to get done. At some point, it comes down to something as simple as dollars and cents. This stuff just doesn't move without money. And the gospel is not an exception to that, because in it, we learn something about prioritization. It's not that God couldn't rain money from heaven like manna, but He chooses to do it that way so that we learn something important in the process. And that is how to prioritize a finite resource for the greatest effect. Turn to Acts chapter 18. Here's a couple of superstars in my book. Acts chapter 18. Verse 1. After these, he left Athens, this is Paul, of course, and went to Corinth. He found a certain Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. He came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them. They were working for by trade. They were tent makers. And you know what happens with Priscilla and Aquila. They become a part of the congregation in Corinth. But then down in verse 18, Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria, and with him were Priscilla and Aquila. What are they doing on board? I thought they were part of the local congregation in Corinth. Do these guys think that they could just uproot and move across the sea and land in Ephesus? Apparently they did. They came to Ephesus, he left them there, and he himself entered the synagogue, reasoned with the Jews. They asked him to stay for a long time. He didn't dissent, took leave of them, said, see you later. And then it's when Apollos arrives there that Priscilla and Aquila are able to take him aside and teach him the gospel. Why? What did these guys think they were doing? Picking up. They've got a business, for pity's sake. They can't just pick up stakes and go to another market where they're an unknown, where they don't have any market share. There's no repeat business. Their whole advertising campaign will have to change because the Ephesians do things different than the Corinthians, right? There's lots of great reasons why Priscilla and Aquila should have stayed in Corinth, but they didn't do that. They said, Paul, if you're going, we're going. That's awesome. I think that's fantastic. And they became, I think probably, certainly, Priscilla and Aquila would have been a part of the core of the Ephesian church. Not unlikely that those guys might have been with Paul when he faced the wild beasts at Ephesus. And it's not recorded, but it's pure speculation. Aquila may be on the beach with Paul in Acts chapter 20 when he calls to him the elders from Ephesus. I don't know. I don't know. Speculation. But a core part of what's going on there. Because they're willing to do what's not normal. It's not normal. In some congregations, we've got people who need to do what's not normal. Who have skills, okay, who could use them more effectively someplace else. Okay. Now, I'm not encouraging everybody to pick up and try someplace new. What I am encouraging you to do is, if there's a need, let's work together, say, as a group, to fill those needs. Let's think bigger. Let's share some objectives. What are we trying to do as a church, as a whole? You know, we have some opportunity over here. How can we exploit those open doors? Who's capable of doing that? Is there somebody who's able to teach and preach effectively? Somebody who knows the Word of God? Somebody who can refute those who contradict? Somebody who can teach accurately the things concerning Jesus? Do we have somebody like that that we could utilize better over here? And working together, can we make that happen? This congregation has a real need for a Christian school. Do we have somebody? You guys who are coming up through the Christian school, this is where you would fit in. We have this place or that place where they're using this and we're trying to get this off the ground. There's a supervisor there, but they really need somebody who can score paces and who's good with a green pen. Some of you guys who've come out of the Christian school, I mean, Mike would be perfect, wouldn't he? I mean, he could do it, man. He could step right in there. See, it'd be great. See, that's a very tangible way of how you can be a part of, right? Learn the things that are necessary. Use the skills that you have. But we're talking about on a larger level here. The big picture of what it means to move the spiritual revolution. If Steve says, hey, I need somebody who can go here and do this and do that, it boils down to this. Let's do Luke 16. In Luke 16, Jesus lays out a very it's a principle that has application in all kinds of different areas. In verse 10, he said, he who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. He who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. If therefore you've not been faithful in the use of unrighteous mammon, that's the little thing, who will entrust the true riches to you? Those are spiritual. Okay. If you've not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, that's your physical possessions, because you don't own them, by the way, who will give you that which is your own? You want to do something? You want to do something great? I mean, who would like, man, wouldn't it be awesome if Steve Doty said, listen, I need, the way that only Steve can do it, you know? He would say, I need you to go and I need you to do this job and it's really big and important and I need you to teach these guys and be able to work with them. Are you up for the task? I mean, who wouldn't want to do that, right? I mean, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be fun? I'm trying, Steve. Wouldn't that be great? If I'm Steve, and I'm not, but if I were, you know what I'd want to know? What little things exactly have you been faithful with along the way? If I'm not taking you because you want to see the world. You know what I want to know? I want to know. Tell me, how involved are you in the local congregation? I want to know. Have you been effective? See, with your own personal Bible studies. I want to know, before I give you anything, it's responsibility, I want to know, what have you done in the stuff you've already got? Before I give you anything. There's a reason why evangelists are the guys who appoint elders, is because evangelists have more skin in the game than anybody else. If they're the ones who built the congregation, they've sacrificed more than anybody else for that congregation. So they are the ones who have the greatest propensity to pick guys who are going to care for the congregation.
Right.
You think I'm going to walk away from Spokane and just hand that to somebody because they look good in a suit? No way, man. No way. Because I know what it took to put that together. You think Steve's going to hand off, you know, some congregation to somebody who's some fly-by-night Bible college graduate? There's my natural tendencies coming out. Of course not. He's going to want to see, what did you do with the stuff that you had? Do you want to be a part of something big? Do something little really well. That's how you get there. That's how you get there. Do a great job in your arena. That'll prepare you for bigger things. If you want to be a part of something big, do the little stuff really well. You want to be in charge of many cities? Do a good job with the one talent or the two talents. Do you think the guy who was given the five talents, do you think he started off with five, or do you think maybe the master was smart enough to give him one first, and then two, and then five? I don't know. Think about it. The Lord's given you talent. Use them right now where you are. If you want to be a part of something big, do a great job with what you have on your plate today. That'll open doors for you to do the next thing. And when you do that well, that opens doors to do the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, so that you have a proven track record of being faithful with little, so that the Lord can entrust you with more. Don't despise the little stuff. Don't minimize what doesn't look to be, in your eyes or the eyes of others, doesn't look to be big. It's the little things that matter. Do a great job with your personal Bible studies. And I would encourage you to start next week. Maybe next month. Not during summer. There's a lot of vacations in summer. It's really hard to get anything done. Right? Maybe in the fall. In the fall. September would be good. Well, the kids are going back to school. So we got to get over the back to school thing. But then after the kids are back to school. Wait, but then they've got the holidays after that. So after the holidays, well, but then it's New Year's. So, yeah, people are changing. They've got resolutions. Maybe, you see the problem? You want to do a great job of making disciples? Here's something you need. You need a list. You need a list of people. Because if you don't make a list, you won't call them. You need a list. And you've got to become really good at getting people's phone numbers. You got to make a list. Who am I going to contact this week? You want to get Bible studies? Of course you do, because you came to the rally this weekend, so you have to say yes. You want to get Bible studies? Here's how you get Bible studies. Have Bible studies.
That's right.
Have Bible studies. You already know people who are right now willing to sit down with you over a cup of coffee. You already have those people. You're waiting for that person who walks in the door and says, "Hi, I've got my life pretty well together, but I'd really like to know how to become a Christian. Can you help me?" That's not going to happen. Use the ones you've already got. You've already got people who right now would love to sit down with you, have a cup of coffee, talk about the Scriptures. You suppose God is going to entrust you with more if you haven't been faithful with the contacts He's already given you? Be faithful with what you got. Do a great job with that stuff. And do it right now. Do it right now. Make a list. You have to keep one. You have to keep a running list. I have to keep a running list. I don't know how else to do it. Because I think about somebody and then I don't. If I don't write it down, and then off it goes. Have to write it down. You've got to write it down. Write down their name. Steve. Right? Larry. Joe. You got to write them down. Write them down. And then you got to follow up. You got to follow up. I'm convinced most people do not ask for a Bible study because they're afraid that other person may say yes. I'm not kidding you. That's held me back a time or two. I mean, if I ask them, they'd probably agree. I think that's why most people stay away, why they don't ask. It's because they're afraid they might get the sale. That's true. I know it's probably, I'm the only guy. Right? That's true. Ask. Be right. You got to go down the list. You got to call them. And if you have a list, you'll be reminded. Oh, yeah, I got to call that guy. I'll do it as soon as I get home. Right? But if you've got the list, you'll remember, you got to do that stuff. Be faithful with the things that you have. Be faithful with the little stuff. Putting the local congregation first. Putting those things. Making spiritual priorities. Letting your kids see you do it. Putting the gospel first. If you're home 6 nights a week, something's wrong. Make the commitments. Put those things first. We want our disciples to be a part of something big. As I've shared with you, I think, it's my personal opinion, I think the Lord is preparing for the next push. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. Okay. That's what I think. Okay. I want my disciples to be a part of that. I want them to think outside the norm. I want the way we do things to be different. I want the way we do things to be bigger. I want us to see things in a way that the world doesn't see them. I recognize my disciples will never do that if they don't see it in me first. I want them to see it in you. Start right now. You have lots of information this weekend, lots of encouragement, lots of great preaching. Start right now. Don't wait. Don't let your inner procrastinator, get the better of you. Start right now. Get her done. Do it. Make the priorities. Okay? And follow through. Write them down.